Hey, welcome in. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and this is All Ball. All hoop, all the time. Sometimes I give a little rants, little thoughts, and then we throw it to an interview. In this case, the rants, the thoughts are all within the interview. Fran Fraschilla is my guest. Of course, he's a longtime college basketball analyst and international draft expert for ESPN. You can also hear him on NBC's coverage of the Olympics, the Summer Olympics this year, both on NBC and on the Peacock Network. He was a longtime college basketball coach. And I want to get to the personal side of Fran Fraschilla because his rise to fame has really been a remarkable journey. And of course, his two sons now in the profession of coaching. But I wanted to start this pod and do this pod more topical because all of the topics of the current moment in the NBA are perfect for Fran. So here's me catching up with Fran Fraschilla. Franny, I want to get into your personal story, your rise to prominence in coaching and rise to prominence in broadcasting. But look, this is like the perfect time of year to talk to you because you have players that you saw more and evaluated more than anybody. Then yeah. We have the Olympics and international competition, plus discussion about Luka. And also you understand kind of I saw that tweet you had about Lithuanian players, the creativity of European basketball and how we're actually stealing from them as opposed to them stealing from us for years. So, but let me start with Trey. Okay.
Yes.
What was your eval of him when he was in the NBA draft a couple years ago?
You know, Doug, because you know how well I know the state of Oklahoma, I've known Trey since he was in sixth grade in Norman. You know, my son James was part of Oklahoma basketball, so I knew Ray Young as a player at Texas Tech. You might have played against Ray. Did you play against Ray?
Yeah. All so, 3 years.
And he was a tremendous player, you know, and so I got to know the Youngs really early. And I have to tell you, like, I saw some of this greatness at times at Oklahoma, and I love Coach Kruger. I felt that season, I did 9 of their last 10 games on ESPN. Right. And I think if Coach Kruger had to do it over again, he probably would not have let the genie out of the bottle so easily. In other words, Trey was this incredibly precocious talent, really turned out to be even a better passer than anybody realized. And I felt like the freshman year at Oklahoma, although we put him on TV every night and we made a big deal of him at ESPN, it was sort of unfulfilling because there was a disconnect by the end of the year between Trey and his teammates. And so when he got to the NBA and he was drafted the way he was, and by the way, traded for Luka Doncic, which at this point is not as crazy a deal as you would think, even though Luka is on his way to generational talent in the Larry, Michael, LeBron magic mode. But I have to give Trey credit, and I give Nate McMillan a lot of credit because he has harnessed an incredible talent, Doug. I did not see this coming the first 2.5 years as an Atlanta Hawk. I don't know about you. What he's doing right now, an NBA guy told me something interesting yesterday, and you were a great passer, so maybe you'll relate to this. He said, Trey is getting great at making the next pass as opposed to looking for the assist.
It's honestly one of the things that led, I think, to his disconnect, some at Oklahoma, but more in the NBA, where what I was told, and I, if I'm being totally honest, like, who watches a regular season Hawks game, right?
Right.
Start to finish.
Right.
But I have friends in the NBA who said, like, look, he can do a lot of the things, but he was, go back to last year before everything got shut down. He was playing to be an all-star, right? He was holding it because, and when you're really, when you have complete control of the game, like he does, you can take that one extra dribble and make sure that your pass leads to a shot. Whereas if you pass a little bit early, that's when it becomes the hockey assist, but no one in broadcast America actually counts the hockey assist. So yes, he's fine.
Yeah.
But that's one of the things, look, here's, and this is, I think, what we're all getting at. He was hard to play with. It's, you know, he's hard to play with. And it's really hard to explain to somebody, how can a guy lead the country in assists and be hard to play with? How can a guy lead the country in scoring and be hard to play with? You can't understand assists, hard to play with. He was hard to play with. And then the other part was, you know, he was so close with Mokan in that AU program with Michael Porter Jr. And they were both described to me as bubble boys. And I was like, well, what does that mean? They're like, well, both their dads know a ton of basketball. And they've kind of protected them from just being like a kid on the AAU circuit. And so sometimes they don't necessarily interact as well with kids their age like they should, because they've been solely focused on the NBA and skill development for years. And the other part was obviously the defense and whether or not he would buy into giving some form of effort, which at times wasn't there at Oklahoma, right? Go ahead.
Well, listen, you know, what I love about this team, and I have some friends that are involved in Hawks basketball, is that Nate McMillan came in midway through the year as the interim coach, and he had an attitude of like, look, I'm going to coach the way I've always coached. I was a defensive guy. I don't think Trey's a difficult personality at all, but in Nate McMillan, you're talking about a guy that played with Sean Kemp and Gary Payton and was, in his own way, a great player in his role in the NBA. And what I love what Nate did was he just pretty much sat Trey down early on and said, you're not going to play the way that you've been playing. We're going to channel all this incredible talent in a way that's going to help you and your teammates and make us really hard to guard and hold them a little more accountable defensively. But I'm amazed. I have to tell you, I'm impressed and I'm amazed.
Me too.
That he's been able to do this. And it's at a point, Doug, as I said earlier, I think Luke, like if our guy from Duke who was involved in the trade, the kid that's hurt now, Cam Reddish.
Yeah.
Cam Reddish was playing really well at the end of last season before he got hurt. If Cam Reddish was a fifth starter on this team, and I do believe he has the talent to be a good, very good NBA player, this trade is not as crazy as people thought, and I thought 3 years ago, as good as Luka is. I think that's a testament to how well Trey's playing.
I'm impressed. I'm amazed. Plus, you know, some of it is like it's the ability to be as creative as he is.
Yeah.
In these, like, you know, he goes in and throws the ball. It wasn't like I've thrown the ball off a backboard to a guy for a dunk, but to do it on a side ball screen in an Eastern Conference Finals in kind of an awkward angle and just like, just throw out the backboard. Like the level of
he's got game
is incredible.
Yeah, it really is. It's mind blowing. Really. It is. And so
you have to be able to pull it off. Right. You got to be able to pull it off.
He's doing it against the best players in the world right now.
Yes.
And he's 21, 22 years old.
Crazy.
Okay.
Speaking of confidence, Ben Simmons' confidence is shot.
Yes.
Now, I thought Ben Simmons was the real deal in college. Now, I knew he didn't work hard when he was at LSU. But I thought some of that was the culture of the place where he was and he absorbed it. And I had heard things about Ben Simmons. I saw that you tweeted about like the level of disappointment not playing with the Aussies because their culture is awesome. And you think that would be helpful.
Yeah.
So like, look, we all see he's got to figure out the shooting, the confidence or whatever. But you also want a sign that he understands how to fix it. Do you think he and Rich Paul understand how to fix it?
No, I don't. I mean, I don't know Rich Paul, but he's obviously a very smart guy. I mean, that speaks for itself. I know coaching, I know player development.
Yeah.
And I know that his shot's not going to be fixed in 3 months. I think his psyche needs to be fixed more than his shot, because I think he can play at an all-star level and he's already proven it. Doug, how about this? You probably know this. He's 24 years old. He's been a three-time all-star, two-time all defense, one-time all NBA third team. The kid is still an amazing talent. His psyche's broken. So how do you fix the most important thing in his game right now?
Which I think is so simple. So Fran, Ben calls you today.
I got the answer. You ready?
Okay, go.
Take a few more days off, call Brian Gorgin, the head of the national team, the Australian national team, and say, I'll be there in LA at training camp. Because, first of all, he has not played. They call him Yank. That's his nickname in Australia, Yank, because his father's American and he has an American way about him, right?
Right.
But he's an Aussie. He loves Australia. I would play for the Australian national team. I would be around Joe Ingles, Patty Mills, Matty Dellavedova, Chris Goulding, all those tough, hard-nosed Aussies who you love to drink a beer with after a game, right?
Yeah.
And I would just soak in that culture of teamwork and togetherness and let those guys build up your confidence. Because they would do it, Doug. I'm telling you, like, I mean this. There is no way his jump shot's improving in 3 months. But
well,
his psyche.
Let me hop in here. Okay. So
yeah.
I think you need to attack it on three fronts. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't think remember when Markelle Fultz tried to spend the offseason fixing his jump shot. And he's had some success now, but he's still, you know, there's still a hitch there. It's still not great, right?
Yeah.
I think you need to work on his psyche. And I think working with the Aussies is great. I think you need to get in a gym and work tirelessly. And then I think you also need to play in games. Like you can't, no matter what you do, working on both the physical and mental aspect of it, until you've done it in a game, you have no sense of where you are. And I get you're like, well, you don't want to do it too early. Like, yeah, I think okay, I'm going to take time away and I'm going to go and lock myself in a gym with a shooting coach. And then I'll have a sports psychologist, whatever. Like that's great. I've done that.
And it doesn't work most of the time.
Then you get back. Then you get into a game.
Yeah.
And somebody's playing 7 feet off you. And all of a sudden, all the work you've done, there's a game slippage element to it. And it's really, really hard. So I would attack it on three fronts. I agree with you. And LA is like his home base. It's a total no brainer to say, I'll do whatever you guys, if you don't want to play me, fine. I just want to practice. I want to be around you. I want to work. I want to be in the. And then every time you're not in the practice, then you go to a gym in LA and you work with whoever your shooting guy is, and you got to work through it. Would you switch him to right-handed?
You know what? No. This is simple. Like, yeah, go play for Australia because you're going to get the games anyway, Doug. You're going to get six games. He's the best player on the Australian team. They might play USA in the gold medal game. And who knows how cool that would be for him to have a breakout game. Maybe they don't beat the USA, but maybe a month with his compatriots, with the guys I mentioned, turns him around and all of a sudden he comes out of the Olympics, quote unquote, new man. Then you go back into the gym and work on some certain things. This guy can be a dominant player in the NBA without a jump shot. I honestly believe that. And if it gets better, great. But I honestly think the psyche part, playing with Australia, to me, that's the panacea right now. Do that. I think it would be a great help to him.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Okay, you mentioned Luka, and you said generational talent.
Yeah.
Generational talent. Okay, so they don't have a head coach. They don't have a general manager. You until recently, like Dallas has been your home, so you totally understand the culture of that environment. You understand what Donnie's done for years. If you were to get a phone call from Mark Cuban and said, Franny, I need to fix this thing.
Yeah.
You can't hire yourself.
Yeah.
How do you build it around Luka in order to get the most out of Luka?
Well, the issue in Dallas is, to me, as a somewhat outsider, although I've lived there 19 years and I know the principles involved, is that Mark Cuban, like a lot of owners, owns a team and can do whatever he wants. And you know it's historic record now, but Donnie Nelson wanted to take Giannis Antetokounmpo last year. It's very simple. He wanted to take Sadiq Bey. Instead, they drafted, because of the analytics guys, Josh Green, the Australian, by the way, coincidentally. And so if you work for Mark, Mark's going to have a lot of say because he's a very smart guy and he thinks he understands basketball. Okay, that's fine. So let's say whoever he hires, Michael Finley, who's been with them, and it's likely who's going to be the next president of operations. To me now, you got to hire. I think you got to hire a professional coach. OK, I get giving some of these guys chances. You know, ex players, et cetera. I get that. I understand it. It works out sometimes. You know, it was only a year ago that JB Bickerstaff was supposed to be the hot name. And I know JB. He's in Cleveland now. And this is his third job. You know, Houston, Memphis, and now Cleveland. Steven Silas is in Houston, a really good guy. I mean, M.A. Udoka is going to be the coach of the Celtics. Great. He deserves it. If the Spurs were smart and they think so highly of Becky Hammon, they would tell her not to take the Portland Trailblazer job and just replace Pop. I think they need a guy with proven experience. I don't know who that is, but someone who's been an NBA head coach who can hold Luka accountable at times because he does get a little out of control, but also allow his unique ability to affect the game to flourish. So I don't know who the experienced veteran is, but I would not take my chances on a generational talent with a first-time NBA head coach.
I agree with you. It's interesting, though, on where the league feels like it's going, right? Like it feels like, you know,
it's cyclical.
Late 30s to early 50s at the oldest. Former player that has some experience because, hey, they can relate to these guys. They can relate to
right,
them.
Right.
And I just think you got to build a staff. If you're not of that, you got to build the right staff that can be the bridge in between, right? Like, that's the mistake of Brad Stevens. Is Brad was very smart. His whole staff was very smart, but there wasn't the connection with the team. And there are other teams like that where there aren't. But
hey, by the way, all four coaches left in the playoffs have been fired and rehired. So this deal about retreads, give me a break. You know what I mean? Like if you talk about black coaches getting opportunities, how cool is it that Ty Lue got fired, got another chance. Doc Rivers gets fired, gets another chance. And then obviously Monty Williams shouldn't have got fired in New Orleans, but did, and is proven to be a great coach. So if I have Luka Doncic, I'm looking for the most experienced. You know who I would hire? And these people are not smart enough to do it. And I say this respectfully towards Stan Van Gundy, because I know this family a long time. They hired the wrong Van Gundy in New Orleans.
But he doesn't want the New Orleans job.
Well, he may not, but he's gonna not get a lot of opportunities, Doug. My point is, can you imagine what Jeff Van Gundy, he did an amazing job with USA Basketball.
He's brilliant.
What he could have done with Zion and that group. And I think that what I love about Jeff, no offense to Stan, is he's got a humanity about him that, along with his incredible knowledge of the game, he's one of very few people to know that rule the other night. I think teams have really missed the boat on Jeff Van Gundy if he wants a coach.
I agree. I think Houston tried to offer it to him and he didn't want it because
it got to a point where that's not where he wants to end his career with the argument between Harden and Westbrook. That would have made no sense.
Right. Right. I mean, there's a job on the West Coast that's not open that might be open. And that's the one that he should, I don't know if they want him for that, but okay. You mentioned the rule. I did know the rule, but I also knew the rule because Jay Triano ran out of bounds play a couple years ago and I was watching and then I watched on highlights and they were like, there's no goaltending on OB plays. No one knows the rules better than you. I learned that from you.
I don't know. I make some mistakes, but thank
15 you. 15 years ago, maybe you said it.
Yeah.
Dan Steer gave us the rule book before one of the years at ESPN and he said, be a maven, know all the rules. And you read it start to finish. And you asked me one time, like, did you know the rules? I was like, man, there was the 10 second count rule in college basketball. I remember I got Majerus corrected me one time. He was watching a game I was doing. And because there used to be a rule where you couldn't reset the 10 second count when you took the ball out of bounds.
Right.
And that changed in college basketball when you got the ball in bounds. Anyway. Okay, so I know you knew the rule. I know you're being self-deprecating and saying you didn't know the rule.
No, but I don't know all the rules. I'll make a mistake.
But you knew the
rule.
You had to know the. Do you know the rule with DeAndre Ayton the other night?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because Jay's a friend. Jay Triano and I go back and when it happened, like I talked to Curtis Shaw, a college guy, the other day about that playing. He tells me that rule is the same rule in college. I have to look that up because I'm not totally sure. But yes, but here's the point about the rules when it comes to guys like you and me. And first of all, Doug, you know, I'm thinking about your dad right now smiling because I know you're the son of a coach. I know the rules better now than I did when I was a college basketball coach. Because when you're on the sideline and something happens in a game, you can go up to the official quietly and say, hey, John, can I sub my guy back in? And he'll go, oh, yeah, coach, that's the rule. You know, yeah, the clock didn't start, but they turned it over. So you're allowed to get your guy back in. It's their mistake. I didn't know those rules when I was coaching, some of them. If I don't know the rule on TV, then I'm no longer an expert. So, and the other thing about it is I have to mention this, okay? I'm not a referee basher, okay? I'm a referee lover because this is the only profession that you have to start out perfect and improve from there. And these guys get them wrong some nights, but by and large, they get 95% plus correct. And I want them to know that I got their back when there's a call in a game that the average fan or game analyst doesn't know. And I say, nope, that's not the rule. Here's the rule. And this is why the official is correct. And so, you know, I think we all have a stake in the game, players, coaches, referees, and analysts, announcers. And I take pride in trying to know the rules.
You mentioned son of a coach and also, and maybe this is how my brain works and how my dad's brain used to work, but it's, and how every coach I've ever played for worked. But
yeah,
when we watch film, we watch it differently, right? First,
yes.
Monty drew up a really good play. And to do it,
yes.
And I understand they shouldn't have had a timeout.
But yes.
And we'll get to that in a second. But
yeah.
To get to like, hey, we got 0.8 seconds. What do you got, coach? All eyes on you to draw it up and to get a dunk. And for people like, well, you know, the play wasn't for Devin Booker. Like, bullshit. If you
yeah.
switch or if you switch, he pops out and it is for Devin Booker, right? Makes you make a choice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So, but when I watch tape, it's the always what went wrong. Okay.
Yeah.
I have my own, I'll give my own thoughts on it, but as a guy who's actually coached in these games, what went wrong for the Clippers? How does the blame get spread?
I can't remember who was on the weak side, but Zubac was not.
Did nothing.
That's right. Yeah. But see, Zubac, see, here's the deal, Doug. I had a rule in my defense. You played for a great defensive coach. Screener's man protects the lane. Okay. So now what makes it difficult is the screener is Devin Booker. So if his man backs off to take away the lob and help Zubac out, then Booker potentially catches and shoots the three, right? Unless they switch out. I don't want to make this complicated, but here's the deal. Sometimes the execution of the play is so good that, you know, it's a game of adjustments. You have a plan. I have an adjustment. You have an adjustment to my adjustment. That's coaching. I thought the execution of the play was so good that I can't really fault the defense, except there might have been somebody on the weak side that could have stayed in the lane, stayed home and tagged Ayton. I can't remember who it was. But I don't really blame Zubac. And it's a beautiful play because Booker's the decoy on the play, or he's going to end up with the jump shot.
So, okay. I will cast a little. So the first mistake I think is
go ahead,
put DeMarcus Cousins on the ball.
All right.
Okay. Because everybody goes like, I need a big on the ball. I need a big on the ball.
Yeah.
You need a guy who acts big, right? Like, okay. Yeah. Maybe you don't want to use Daniel Oturo, who's actually longer, younger, more athletic. That's fine. Maybe you put Zubac on the ball, right? Because it's not like, but whoever's on the ball, in professional basketball, in college basketball, definitely professional basketball, the rule is first 3 seconds, you're taking away, you're jumping up and down, you're taking away the middle. And
at the very end,
you're taking away corner, right?
Yes, yes.
So,
yes.
But he did nothing. He just stood there like, somebody told me to stand here and wave my arms. That happens a lot.
That happens a lot.
So that was a mistake in college too.
Yeah.
That was a mistake.
Yep.
I agree with you in that normally when you're on that weak side, you're worried about playing tag, but you got to one read the play and two, that play, the out of bounds was so close to the corner. Like that's almost outside of throwing to the weak side corner, that's almost an impossible pass to make. Again, if DeMarcus Cousins is taking away the middle, you shouldn't be able to nearly have as good a sight line. But then the obvious thing is, like, why wouldn't you just switch everything? Even if Booker catches it, it's not like a normal switch where you can catch and now you have a mismatch with a big guy. You should switch everything. And, you know, if he makes a shot over a hand, he makes a shot over a hand. It's the NBA. But you can't give up a dunk by Batum not switching.
The only way I would disagree at the last part is the switch at the end would have meant that DeAndre Ayton is still going to catch that ball over the rim. And then you're asking the switcher to know the rule. See, you're asking the switcher to be able to know the rule and also get his hand over the rim.
But couldn't you meet him? I mean, like in the NBA, like you should meet him at the point of the screen.
But he's going to still fight. He's still going to get to the rim, I think, on that play.
So there was a ref that you and I knew very, very well. He's retired, Steve Wellmer. And Wellmer wouldn't call anything, but he would tell you why other people call things. And I remember one of the first games he did of mine when I was at Oklahoma State where, you know, kind of a similar play where you knock it out of bounds and it could have been off the other guy. But he's like, look, what would you prefer, me call you for a foul or give them the ball? Right. And like so maybe I missed who it went out of bounds on, but I also didn't call a foul. So I'm going to give him the ball.
Yeah.
My issue with the Clippers, the first thing is like Paul George, and he didn't choke him, right? It was around and out and back rim.
Yeah.
So you can't run to the ball, catch the ball, hold the ball to get fouled, miss both. You just can't. Second part is, the Mikal Bridges shot, I don't know. Did you go by the 74% deal? Like my dad always said, 74% of the time it comes off to the weak side. They didn't box
I've said that on TV. Yeah, it comes that ball comes off 70. I used to say 70% of the time the ball bounces the other side. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So two mistakes there by the Clippers. But you're right. Like we have this desire to get everything perfectly right. And part of the beauty to sports is it's not perfect.
Yeah.
It's an imperfect game, you know?
Yeah.
And the officials aren't perfect. And what we've done is we've made it impossible for them to make a call because who wants to be overturned by video replay and then they think you're an idiot? Like, I just see it like, hey, watch it in real time. It's kind of hard.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm in between on this because I do like monitor review, but I don't like 10 minutes at the monitor. And, so I just think some games like the other night with the whatever it was, 32 minutes to play the last 3 minutes. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's a little much. But I think overall, as a coach, I want you to get the call right. Use the monitor, but let's not overdo it. And I think there are times where we just go way overboard. And let's face it, because of the pressure of what's involved in the NBA playoffs, if they don't review a play that ends up being the wrong call, and they get excoriated for it. So I can't really blame the officials because this is part of their job is to use the video replay monitor.
Last thing. And again, I know you're very busy. I want to do the personal. What I really like for this pod is telling your story. Okay, but you're going to get to do the Olympics again for NBC. Yes. I think a lot of fans think that the same teams are always going to provide the same level of competition, but that's not really how it works, right? There was the run of the Argentinian teams where they won the world championship. That group they're now too old, right? And this current group of Argentines isn't as talented as that group. There was the Spaniards who were close, and that group of Spaniards has kind of aged out a little bit with Pau and Marc Gasol and Ricky Rubio and others.
Yeah.
So who can beat us?
Two teams. By the way, if you're a USA fan, you're very happy this week because of all the stars that have committed to play. So that was a great surprise to me. Kudos to Sean Ford of USA Basketball, the de facto GM, for getting all these guys to want to play in the Olympics in a strange year, Doug. Remember, no fans, okay? So who can beat us? France can beat us. They have a solid nucleus. Rudy Gobert, obviously. Fournier, pretty good player. And see, what they have and what Australia has that we will not have is culture and chemistry. because they have been together for a number of years. So Australia can beat us as well. And obviously Ben Simmons would help, but they have enough. They have enough chemistry and toughness. Both of those teams can be very dangerous because in the Olympics, in a 40-minute game where you can actually play zone, it's a different game than the NBA. But I would say to that point, USA has put together a team of great offensive players. And I think that they're going to be hard to beat.
I think so, too. The French are interesting because, you know, they've done better internationally, but they've had some talent. I mean, you know, with Boris Diaw and Tony Parker, they never really won anything with that group. It's
right.
Interesting because they should have been internationally much more competitive than they have been previously. They'll be, but I really like the team that they built because it does. Like, I like that you have Draymond. You got to have a Draymond.
Yes.
You
know?
I like that you have a Kevin Love. Would Kevin Love be lined up and said 12 best players in the NBA with Kevin Love? No. But again, this game is different, and he can play center in FIBA style basketball and be really, really effective. And he can
has been already for USA.
Yes.
Kevin has already played USA and he fits that style. So yes.
And obviously there has to be enough shooting. There has to be enough versatility defensively.
You know who's going to play center?
Who?
Sometimes a lot. A guy named Kevin Durant. If he's 6'11".
I've been the guy. The only thing is he's not thick. I've been the guy.
No, it won't matter. Doug, it won't. Can he guard Rui Hachimura? I mean, you know what I mean? Unless you're playing Jokic and there's no Bogut. But my point is, for the USA team, when you put five guys out there and Kevin Durant is at the five and Draymond's at the four and, you know, whoever's at the 3, 2, and 1, my point is it really won't matter. They will be able to guard any center in this tournament. Unless Jokic plays, which is still not out of the realm of possibility, they're going to qualify without him, Serbia, and then he'll have 3 weeks to decide whether he wants to be on the team because right now he wants a rest. But no, my point is, it really wouldn't matter who USA puts out there. They could play Draymond at the five. They have firepower.
Is it Cade Cunningham? Would you take anybody other than Cade Cunningham?
No, man. I'll tell you, Cade had to make me a believer because I didn't go into the season saying, oh, he's already number one. I have, like you have, because you love the Cowboys, I have seen so much of him. He does so many inherently smart things that you cannot coach. Someone coached it. He is unique. There is a similarity between him and Luka in the sense that they're big, strong point guards who make everybody better. And Doug, here's the interesting thing about that. People say, well, what's the difference? Luka proved he did it at 17 and 18 against the second best players in the world.
Right.
Cade's only done it against Big 12 and college competition.
Right.
But I think Cade's going to be a very good NBA player.
My issue with Houston at two is, like, I mean, Jalen Green's a freak athlete, and I think for him, the G League thing worked. It didn't work for Dacian Nix and some of these other dudes, right?
Yeah.
But I don't, like, Houston needs, I feel like they need a Jalen Suggs. Even if he's not the best prospect, he's the guy who can, as they rebuild that franchise, it's a guy who can make everybody better. If you're Houston, you know this, you know these guys way better than I do. Where do you go?
Well, I would say this. All five of those guys that are scheduled to go in the first round, and I don't know why people are dropping Kuminga out of this mix, because I saw him 3 weeks ago, and he's a little raw, but he's basically a 6'8" Kawhi Leonard in terms of body type and some skill level. He can really shoot it. If I'm Houston, I think the safest pick is Evan Mobley. Because of the size, length, and skill level, you know. But Jalen Green, to me, there's something about him that tells me he's going to be averaging 25 points a game early in his career.
Yeah.
And he's going to do it over a long period of time. Jalen Suggs, to me, I love him, man. He is mid to late career Chauncey Billups to me. A big two-way point guard who can also play off the ball, could score. I don't know who the best of those five is going to be. I honestly don't. And they're all a little different.
Yeah, that's why I agree with you on Green, but my fear is that he becomes one of those empty stats guys for five.
Bradley Beal.
Right.
But I don't think he's
no fault of his own. Whereas if you take a Suggs, he may not be the player or the scorer that the other two or that Mobley is. But yeah. I think you have to build a whole new team. I think he can help make everybody better.
I don't disagree. I don't disagree in a vacuum, but I think these guys who know how to build teams, it's three-dimensional chess here. Who are free agents we can sign, right?
Yeah.
Who are the guys on our team that we want to keep? Christian Wood would be the logical one, you know, guy that had a really good year. So it's not just, yes, I agree. Jalen Suggs makes everybody better. But I also think, like, I have to evaluate. I don't take Jalen Green and he turns out to be generational. You know, who knows? I mean, you know, I just go back to 1994, slightly before your time, you know, right about the time you were coming out of high school, I think, right? When did you graduate from high school?
95.
Okay. So in 94, Big Dog was number one, rightfully so, a great player and a good NBA career, very good NBA career. And number two was Jason Kidd. Number three was Grant Hill. So my point is, I'm really not sure who's going to be the best of that group. I think they all potentially could be the best player in this draft, all five of them.
You've been more than generous with your time.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I need a solid guarantee that we're going to do the Fran Fraschilla, This Is My Life podcast.
You got it. We'll do it next time. Okay. I look forward to it.
Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks, man.
That was awesome for part one. He's promised a part two. A quick note, there's a Josh Pastner part two that's set to come out. There's a Jamel Thomas part two that's starting to come out. You should go through the archives. They're outstanding. I'm really proud of what we're doing here with All Ball. And Fran, of course, as you heard, he's committed to doing a second one, more on him than on the current state of basketball, although I do want to ask him about the state of college basketball. I'll just give you this thought, though, in terms of the reviews. I think the guys have to go to a neutral corner. I think there has to be no coaching. I think you need a time limit, but you can't do away with the reviews. I think the best way to do so is to remove them from any sort of proximity to their coach. If your coach is on one sideline, you have to be on the opposite sideline, the opposite end of the floor until the review is over. That way you take away any idea of a timeout. What do you guys think? Pretty good, right? All right. Thanks for listening. Make sure you check out the Doug Gottlieb Show daily, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific. On the iHeartRadio app, foxsportsradio.com. You can download the podcast of that as well, or listen on Sirius XM 217, 203, or on any of our 300 affiliates nationwide. That's Fox Sports Radio. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and this is All Ball.